Hello and welcome to the Unbundled Attorney Mastermind Podcast. My name is Dave Ahrens and I'm the co-founder and CEO of Unbundled Attorney. In this podcast, we interview many of our provider attorneys, as well as some of the leading experts in the industry to isolate the best practices for building internet-generated leads and how to ethically and effectively offer unbundled legal services and other more affordable options in your practice. For more information about our services, visit www.unbundledattorney.com. All right, I'm excited as usual because we have another one of our veterans coming on the show today for this interview, Ms. Barbara Rogachevsky, who's been an attorney with us as a provider for, at least 2.5 years. She works out of Akron, Ohio. And what's wonderful about Barbara is the way she's been able to cultivate a very flexible approach to the types of options that she offers. She does a lot of pay-as-you-go, all the way down to doing 1 hour at a time, 2 hours at a time, 3 hours at a time, combining that with document preparation, connecting people to the forms online and walking people through those steps, figuring out how to file, what's the next step when they go to court, and really just meeting people where they're at and creating a plan, as she'll talk about in this episode, to meet their legal needs in consideration for their financial budget as well. And she's really good at communicating that to the client so they know that she's there to help them and find a way to help them. And that really is her guiding focus. How can she solve their problem, taking into consideration where they're at financially and being flexible and working with people in any way that she can. So she really goes into those options. We talk about the how she has people be more transparent about what they can afford through her communication, how she uses the script, and some of the important components of the script that we provide to make sure that the client is in a position that they want to move forward now, to get an idea of what they think they expect things are going to cost, find out what they can afford, and then which allows her to communicate to the client very clearly the types of options that she can offer. It really informs how she works, how she's going to work with the client. So this is a really useful and informative conversation from an attorney that has a lot of experience working with leads for a long, long time. And I hope you enjoy it, this interview with Barbara Rogachevsky, one of our provider attorneys out of Akron, Ohio. All right, Barbara, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, I'm really glad that we're getting a chance to reconnect and catch up. It's been a lot of good years working together. I think we were just talking before we started the recording that we've been at this for about 2.5 years now, so you're one of our long-term veterans.
Well, it's been a good 2.5 years, and I appreciate all your help.
Yeah, absolutely. And we certainly appreciate the work you've been doing for the clients we send you in the Akron area. So maybe what we could do, Barbara, is just share a little bit about your background, the region that you operate your practice in, maybe your practice areas, and just a bit about you so those who are listening can get to know you a bit.
Okay. Well, first of all, my office is located in Akron, Ohio, which is in Summit County. I service several counties in this area, specifically Summit, Portage County, Medina County. I do take some cases out of Stark County, and I've also received some referrals out of some contiguous counties. And of course, as many attorneys have, attorney will travel. If you're willing to pay me to go there, I may very well consider doing it. I was originally licensed in Ohio in 1997, but I was actually a practicing public defender intern for a year prior, so I'm now in my 20th year of practice. And my primary practice areas are domestic relations, family law, criminal defense, and juvenile court, which here in my area consists of children's services cases, relatives who want to get custody of children, legal custody cases, as well as juvenile delinquency cases, which are children charged with crimes or committing acts that would be crimes if they were adults. So that's a little bit of my background.
Right, absolutely. And what I'd really love to dive right into on our chat today is just into the process you've developed for getting in touch with the clients and how quickly you're able to do that. And obviously, you know, more and more clients have started to call you with some updates we've made to our process and you know, how you go about that aspect of it. And then, of course, once the clients come in, some of the flexible ways you've been offering to work with them, which has allowed so many more clients the ability to work with you and get, you know, services for their case. So maybe we could start with, you know, how you're currently receiving the leads. I believe you get the emails and then you give them a call. Maybe you can walk us through those initial stages from when those leads come in, how you approach the initial conversation to getting them to come in to see you.
Well, as you know, of course, I usually get the lead via email. I'm sure that's the way most people get them. What's interesting is because you have made some changes to the website with the call to action, sometimes I don't even realize I have received the lead, except that the client has called me. In fact, today, about 15 minutes before starting our podcast, I had someone call in here. She had just received my information because she'd filled out the application online. And as she was calling me, I was receiving the email. So, because we had about 15 minutes before we were going to start, I did a real quickie, you know, interview with her on the phone, and we did a little bit of an abbreviated, you know, work through the script so that I could try to help her right away. And we exchanged the necessary information, and I think she's working on trying to figure out what she can afford. And she said she's going to get back to me. So that's one way, of course, people contacting me. People also, because of the call to action, are texting me. Mm-hmm. And I had that happen today as well. I had a lead earlier today, and I was actually just getting ready to contact him when he texted me. So we were actually in the process of trying to get a hold of each other at the same time. And so I called him, and we were able to talk right away. And he actually said to me, "I didn't realize you were going to call this fast," which was kind of nice. So I think he was pleasantly surprised. But as you know, I get the leads. If I'm available to call them, I do that immediately, of course. Right. If I get the lead and I'm otherwise indisposed and I can get to my phone, Graham was nice enough to put together a template for me where I can text the client, just touch base, let them know that I know that they're out there looking for some help and to reach out right away. And that works out nicely because then they know there's somebody there for them. And I also then try to follow up with a phone call and an email. If I text them, then I also try to email the same similar information, so that because sometimes people really are calling from landlines and you don't always know from the phone number. So I try to cover those bases and then try to follow up with a phone call as soon as I'm available. And that actually did work well for me today as well. A couple days ago, somebody I got the referral. I texted them. They were in a meeting. They said they'd get back to me. And we did a little back and forth, and I just was able to speak to him today, and we set him an appointment for tomorrow. And he didn't even ask me how much it would be. I don't think he's technically looking for unbundled at all. I think he just wanted a lawyer, went online, and because the site's so high in the search engine, that's how he found me.
Yeah, that's certainly our magic and mastery of work. And you know, you mentioned the text messaging. It was interesting because we were just at the Clio Cloud conference, and Gary Vaynerchuk, who a lot of people in the legal industry hasn't heard of, did a keynote, and one of the things that he talked very clearly about is the impact of mobile on the industry and how much people use smartphones now. And you know, he even asked the question while you're in the audience, how many of you have this mobile device within arm's reach when you go to sleep? And like 95% of the room raised their hand. And so text messaging has become a really impactful way to reach out to clients. Can you share how often it is, or how much of the time when you send out those text messages, people are actually engaging? You know, because you call, you email, you text. How often are they actually getting back to you via text message?
Pretty often. I think if I'm texting them at an actual mobile number, they're texting me back pretty much right away. In fact, I texted someone and then I was in the process of emailing them, and they already texted me back before I could finish sending out the email. So I scrapped the email because we already connected and we're talking minutes. So.
And in the text message, if they're texting you back, do you kind of engage in a bit of a text message back and forth, or is it really just, okay, go ahead and call our office, here's our number? And is it kind of just scheduling them to call you? What's your strategy there?
I leave it up to the referral. Sometimes they are just texting me back saying, "Okay, thanks, be in touch," or sometimes they want to set something up to talk, and I've done that. I let them lead it where they want to go, or I've had them say, I'll call you when I'm free. It just depends. I think they just really feel like it's great that somebody reached out to them when they're obviously in the middle of thinking about their problem. So that's good for them. And then I do whatever they need me to do.
Right. Absolutely. Okay. So then you have that chat with them. How long are you spending on those calls, and maybe walk us through the stages of each call? Obviously the first part you listen, you find out their case, find out their goals. What is your process that you've developed over the years in doing so many of these calls to help them take that next step, and maybe what some of the things that you've learned not to do in that process as well?
Well, I recently did some follow-up work with Graham, because I really wanted to streamline this and really focus it more toward getting people. I guess it's the sales aspect of it. I'm a lawyer and I'm not necessarily a salesperson. So my natural default is I want to find out about your case. I want to figure out how to help you. And I also need to be focusing on, let's get you to the point where you're retaining me, because I can't help you if you're not retaining me. So, I've refocused on not only just getting some information about the case, but also bringing them to the point where they're in a position to decide, is this something I want to pursue, and doing it a little more quickly. So not just getting them into the office and then having them decide, maybe I don't want to do this, and now I've invested some time. Now I'm trying to really streamline the process on the phone with getting to the point where if they're coming into my office, they're ready to bring me the money and actually sign paperwork and get started immediately. Not just for their benefit, not just for my benefit, but also for theirs. Because if they're coming in within the next couple days and they're ready to get started, I can just start helping them that much faster. So I'm working the script that you provided. Obviously it doesn't cover everything. So, you have to be a little flexible. Everybody's situation anymore is so unique. It's not just divorce, or it's not just custody because we used to be married and now we're divorced, but we're changing things. So there's all sorts of strange things going on out there, and you need to be prepared for whatever's dropped in your lap and be prepared to be flexible with the script itself. But trying to follow it as a general guideline, ask some questions, find out the situation, figure out if are they just researching and they don't really want to do anything yet, or they really need a lawyer and they need one now. And if that's the case, then let's start talking about what we can do now to help you. What's your situation? These are your options. What's going to work best for you? And then let's try to tailor. And I really try to focus on, I'm asking these questions because I want to make a plan to help you. I'm always focusing on, let's make a plan to help you. And I think that makes people feel better, because
that's what you say, that's what you share with them. That's what
you say to them. Absolutely. Yeah. I want to make a plan to help you, because if people are searching for a lawyer, they got a big problem. Somehow they have a big problem and they need somebody to help them to fix it. And it's obviously causing them distress, or they wouldn't even be researching the concept of spending hundreds or thousands of dollars on someone. So there's a lot of emotion involved. And if you can reassure them, I'm here to help you, we're going to make a plan, all of a sudden people will say, oh God, I feel so much better. I'm just so glad I talked to you. And isn't that why attorneys do what we do? Because we want to help people. So if you convey that immediately, I'm here to help you, Let's figure something out to help you and to make a plan to make the situation better. You're going to make them feel better. You're helping them. But of course, then they're also going to want to work with you.
Yeah, absolutely. And that plan usually has a twofold approach. One is the legal steps that need to be taken, the petition or the documents or whatever is the legal pathway. But then the second piece is the financial plan to figure out how you can meld the two, get what needs to be done, and do it within a financial component that's within their budget as well, right?
Exactly.
So how do you explain, or what kind of questions do you ask once you've determined what they want to see happen? You have a good understanding of the case, and you say, okay, well, let's put together a plan so we can help you. What kind of questions do you ask? I mean, it sounds like you may give some feedback on, these are some of the things we need to do legally. What kind of questions do you ask to find out where they're at financially, and then how do you start to tailor or what do you share with them about what things will likely cost to give them an idea of what that will look like financially?
Well, and again, I've been going back to the script, making sure that I'm asking them, first of all, if this is something they need to do now. Are they just researching and dabbling, or is this high priority? Because I think it makes a difference. If they're just dabbling and you're throwing numbers out to them, they may scare away because it's not a priority. But once you've determined that this is something that they have to jump all over, and oftentimes it's because now there's court dates pending, somebody has taken them to court, there's something looming and it's coming soon. If you know that, now you can start talking about, all right, what can we accomplish now? You have to do something right away. So the next question is, and it's right on the script, have you done any research about finding an attorney and what it's going to cost you? Some people, this is the first thing they've done. Some people have done some research and they've found out, oh God, this could be really expensive. And that's why I'm still searching. And so once you've figured that part of it out, then there's that next question.
So before we jump forward then, so let's run through this two scenarios. So there's the person that has done the research and they say $1,500, $2,500, $5,000, you know, they've been quoted. And so, you know, maybe we could, you know, you handle that one way, which is obviously there's the person that's been quoted something really high. Then there's maybe someone that's been quoted something pretty low, but usually it's something much higher because, you know, you're one of the few attorneys that will offer unbundled and flexible options and so forth. That's the idea of what we're doing here. And then there's the option of people saying, you know, I really have no idea. How do you handle those two different scenarios based on that feedback?
Well, certainly if they have been quoted and they're still looking, they've been quoted something they can't afford.
Yeah.
So I'm finding out what they've been quoted. And, you know, people are amazingly open most of the time. I mean, they're talking to a complete stranger. We've been on the phone 10 minutes and they're telling me what people are charging them. And very often, frankly, sometimes it's more than I would have quoted them for full representation. I mean, I'm getting people doubling my fee, and I'm not even sure why, just to get started, based upon what they're telling me. But nevertheless, whatever they've been quoted isn't doable for them. So I will, you know, I'll get into, first of all, if I think I can just undercut it, I may just go ahead and do that. And you know, right away, you're already winning that discussion. Because if you're undercutting, then they're already happy with you. And I'm not shorting myself. I mean, I'll quote what I quote. If it's something where they just don't know, like they're just starting their research, then I think you do need to start having that discussion about what do they have available. Because that's going to frame the discussion of what I can do to help them.
Yes.
And sometimes they say, well, I don't really know what I have available. And sometimes they do know. If they know and they tell you, well, now you know what you're dealing with. Are you really dealing with somebody who can afford full representation and now you can start trying to work that situation? Or are you really looking at somebody that has to do an unbundled? But then you can talk to them and say, well, okay, now that I know what you have available, now we can make a plan for how I can help you. And again, we're back to that plan. Now we can make a plan. Now I know how I can help you. And it's always about, we're trying to figure out a way to help you within your budget. Now that I know your budget, I know what I can do to help you within your budget. And as soon as you start saying that, their ears open. Oh, great. They can't wait.
Is that the component that, I'm sorry to break in there, but is that the component that helps them feel comfortable with being transparent about what they're financially? Because I can only imagine some people are thinking, oh, well, they're asking me how much I can afford to figure out what to charge me, you know, as opposed to asking me what I can afford to figure out how you can tailor a solution to that budget. Like, how do you get around that initial maybe resistance people might have to be transparent about where they're at financially?
Well, and that's exactly it. I do think some people don't want to tell you what they have available because they think, oh, well, if I tell you that I have $2,000, then you're going to charge me that much when I could have got it for $1,500. It's, you know, it's that old used car salesman concept. You know, don't show your hand too much. And I do think that the script deals with that. So that you do have to, if they seem to be skeptical of why you're asking the question, I am explaining. I want to know what you have available because we have options in my office for how to help people depending on their budget. So if I know how much you have to work with, then I know how to help you. I can make a plan to help you that way. And I can help you to get what you want within your budget. And if they still won't tell you, then I haven't had that happen yet, actually, that they won't tell me at that point. That might be the point where people say, I actually don't have any money.
Yes.
I've had that happen.
Yep.
Or I've had people say, I don't have any money, but I might have to ask my parents or my uncle or whatever. And I'm not sure what they can do for me yet, that sort of thing. And then that's when you launch into the definitions of unbundled versus full representation and just tell them, these are the options we offer. And I'm going to let you decide how best to handle it.
Can you break down how you would convey that to, well, I mean, obviously, if you have the person that has just no money, do you give them kind of just a broad snapshot? Do you give them kind of a general idea of where they could start? Do you talk about maybe just come in for 1 hour, give them like a really clear just first step price point? Or how do you handle someone that's of very, very limited means, no money, or even just a couple hundred to start?
Well, what I first do is I always make sure that I explain full representation. I start with that. Because I don't really care what kind of case you have. That's always ideal. Not just because I make more money, but because they get more services. Because the reality is with unbundled, they're representing themselves, and I don't think there are any lay people who are as good at representing themselves in court as an attorney is at representing them. So I want them to understand what they're getting for that full service. Even if they decide they can't afford it and they can't come up with the money, I want them to know that that's the ideal and this is why it costs what it costs. So that they don't just think everybody's trying to fleece them or, you know, make as much as they possibly can. I want them to understand how much service an attorney provides for that $2,000 and how much we really do. And then from there, say, for those clients who cannot afford that level of service, we do offer unbundled options. And then I go through what those options are. But specifically, I think I like to tell them what kind of services we offer for that unbundled, the document preparation and filing, the coaching them about what kind of hearings they're going to expect and what kind of procedures are going to happen in their kind of case and what they can expect from this particular local court. Because every court is different. And if they're talking to a local attorney, presumably that local attorney has experience in that local court. We know our judges. We know our magistrates. We know all the unwritten procedures that nobody can know going in unless they've been there before numerous times. And I try to convey how important it is to know what this court does and how they do it and when they do it so that I can teach them those things ahead of time so that even if they're representing themselves, they know what to expect and how to be prepared. That's probably the most valuable thing that I can offer as an unbundled attorney. And I tell them, you're representing yourself, but you have help. It's not as good as full representation, but it's a whole lot better than not having anybody to help you at all. And then I can tailor the cost of that to whatever you can afford. It's best to have this much money to start so that I'm setting them up for that. But at the end of the day, you're the one that decides how much you spend because you're basically buying by the hour. And I will never go over your budget because you're deciding how much and how many hours you're going to retain an attorney for. And I think that makes them feel much more comfortable at, oh my God, I'm not going to get in over my head, but I'm going to have some help.
Right. So those are the pay-as-you-go options that you've been just amazing at offering over the years here and cultivated these, doing them in a really approachable manner, and it's especially in your communication. I mean, it's really wonderful to hear you share how you kind of step them through that. Can you talk about some of the options that you might share depending on where they're at financially? Obviously every case is a little different, so it's always going to be tailored to the person and what, you know, maybe some certain factors about what needs to be done and in the time frame it needs to be done. So given that, what are some of the things that you might do? You know, I know you have like the hour by hour, maybe there's the document prep, then maybe there's the, you know, next step might be preparation and appearance. I mean, maybe you can step through some of what those options might look like and cost for various different situations.
Sure. What I like to do is I like to make sure that the client understands that we're here to help them with whatever they need help with. If they can prepare the documents on their own, then they can do that. And they don't need to pay me to do that. But if they want to go hour by hour and they want to spend $200 having me draft their documents and make sure they're done really well and filed properly, we can do that. And for each hour they need me, they can just bring in $200, and because that's what I charge, and then they buy an hour. If they want to buy 2 hours, they can buy 2 hours. And I've actually had clients who had pretty complicated cases who could not afford full representation. But every few weeks, they'd call up, they'd make an appointment for an hour, they'd bring $200, and they would bring a list of things they wanted to get done in that hour, and we'd do that for them. And when the hour was up, we would be done, and then they would call me in a couple more weeks, and we'd do another hour. And that worked for that person because that was what they were able to afford. That was how often they could come up with money. And it worked well for me, too, because that is a client I never would have had otherwise. So it was really a win-win situation. I recently took on an unbundled that was able to put down about $800. Well, that's going to buy him about 4 hours of time. So what we've done is we have drafted all of the paperwork for him. We are mailing everything with him to his home with a complete list of instructions, all of the copies already made. And what he's going to do is he's just going to walk into the courthouse and slap it down on the counter and file it. And we've even prepared the documents so that he can ask the court to waive his filing fee. So he's going to save about $300.
Okay.
And then once that stuff gets filed, he's going to send us copies of everything. And then we're going to say, okay, you've gone through the first step. Now here's what's going to happen. Let's talk about getting you through the next step. And see what he feels he needs us to do for him. And we're going to leave it up to him to decide how he uses his time. And meanwhile, he's not using a lot of my time or my assistant's time. So this is going to take him a lot further, and he's going to have a chance to save up a little more money so that when the money he's paid me has run out, now he's got a little bit more to bring in and we can get him through the next couple of steps. So those are two different ways we can use these unbundled services to help people depending on their needs and the complexity of their case.
Right. Exactly. And so once you've kind of outlined the various different options as you're describing here for them, what's the next step for the client and how do they book the appointment? And do you take a deposit for that? Or what's that next step if they want to move forward with going ahead and meeting with you? Or are there ever cases where you do these things over the phone? I would assume since you're local and most people are local area, they mostly come in the office. But if so, what's that next step for them?
At that point, I tell people I'd like to have them come into the office and meet with me. Because when we do these unbundled discussions, they've gotten to the point where now they're ready to move forward anyway. So I tell them, and the other thing, of course, is many people already have cases that are either pending or being reopened. And if that's the case, I need to see some paperwork. And I tell people, you know, I can do my most effective work for you if I can look at the paperwork that you have in your case and get a better feel for what's going on. And that's another reason to get them in the office, because the discussion we're having on the phone is really all theoretical until I can look at the court orders. Once I have those court orders, and I hate to rely on the client to tell me everything I need to know from the paperwork, because very often people have not even looked at their paperwork in a long time, or they're just getting these things and they're very emotional and they're not really sure what they say. So I try to convey the importance of my being able to review the paperwork that's governing their case. And that helps to get them into the office. And then I tell them, you know, we're at the point where I'd like to see your paperwork. It sounds like you're interested in moving forward. So let's set you an appointment and let's start to finalize this discussion and get you on board so we can start to help you right away. And I really stress, let's try to help you right away. Because obviously people want, if they're at this point, they want help right away.
Right.
There are clients I just want to say that are out of town. I had one call me today who lives in, I think, Kansas. But she's got a case pending here. So for her, we'll set her a phone appointment. And I'll ask her to send me paperwork that's relevant, and I'll tell her what I need. And the clients can scan them and email them to me or fax them over here. And that is like having an in-person appointment. But I will do it for them on the phone if they can't travel to the office. and we'll do the same things. Whatever it takes to help the client, and we can do it all remotely if necessary.
Right. And okay, so then that next step, do they pay a fee to come into the office? Do they put a deposit on file in case they don't show up? Or is it just they come in and it's free consultation from there too?
Well, the initial consultation is not exactly free. The way I've been doing it for the first how many years I've been doing this is that first consultation, there's no upfront charge. But if I take your case, I'm going to charge for the time I spend for that initial consult. Because when they're coming in, now I'm spending between a half hour and an hour gathering detailed information, reading their paperwork, digesting all the information I need to have, and often now giving them some insight about procedure and law. And so I'm using that time to help them. If they decide ultimately that they're going to walk out the door and not work with me, they're not taking any risk by coming in. But at the same time, if they do decide to work with me, I'm now going to use all of that information to help them. And very often the information I gather in that first meeting is information I use throughout the course of the case. So I guess you call back charge for it, because I think that is appropriate and fair.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so if they then came in the office and spent an hour with you and decided they, you know, wanted you to, you know, draft the documents for them, and the fee to do that would be the amount of time that you need to draft the documents plus the time that they spent with you already in the office, right?
That's correct.
Okay, fair enough. And then if the person decides that they don't want to hire you, then, you know, they spent that time with you, elected not to move forward for whatever reason, and didn't have to pay a fee or even put a credit card down to be able to come in the office and meet with you.
That's correct.
And you found that most people do you explain that to them in that initial consultation over the phone, that's kind of how that first meeting works, and do they feel pretty comfortable with that?
Well, let's put it this way. We have historically gotten calls from people that the first thing they ask is, do you do a free consultation? That's not always a good sign, but that I explain it in that way. And what I tell them is the initial consultation, there is no upfront fee. After we conclude our meeting, if we decide to work together, I will take the time spent in that consultation out of the retainer when it's paid. If we decide not to work together, then it doesn't cost you anything. And I think people then understand that, yes, if I'm spending that time to help you, then they're going to have to pay for it. But I think people don't want to pay upfront to meet with an attorney for the first meeting, because what if they decide they don't like you or they don't want to work with you? Now they've been charged. It seems to make people feel better that they're not handing over money to a stranger the minute they walk in the door. Mm-hmm. But I think at the end of the day, it also weeds out some of the people who are just shopping around for free legal advice.
Right.
So I hope it does what it's intended to do. I guess no system's perfect. But I think the unbundled, when they're looking for someone, I think they do understand that's appropriate. And I've had people come in after I've explained that to them and they say, oh, well, that seems fair. Sure, that sounds good. Let's do that. And I suppose anybody who I explain that to and now they don't want to come in, well, I've just saved myself an hour meeting with them. Because if you're not even willing to meet with me at no upfront charge, then I can't even imagine why I'd want to meet with you.
Yeah. I mean, it's a good kind of check on making sure that your time is, you know, it was recognizing your time is valuable as well. And if they don't even want to come in with the thought that if they had to hire you, they'd have to pay for that. I mean, it's like, well, then you're not really valuing my time, are you?
That's not the client I'm looking for. I don't
care
exactly how many hours they're buying. That's somebody who doesn't value your time and your service. And however they came to me, even if it was an unbundled, perhaps I'm not the attorney for them.
And I don't know who is. I think that's a very fair check and balance there. It makes a lot of sense to me. And, you know, if I heard someone tell me that, you know, if you don't hire me, you don't pay me anything. If you hire me, then, you know, that you pay for the time that that we use together. That seems fair enough. You know, it's a no risk offer. You know, basically it's like a no risk trial offer, you know,
pretty much. I mean, I take all the risk and if that's not a good enough deal for the client, then I guess you probably ought to go somewhere else, I guess.
Yeah, well, from, you know, what we're hearing, a lot of folks are taking you up on that and then also pulling the trigger when they come in the office. So maybe you could share a bit about, you know, especially for those attorneys that haven't done, very much of the pay as you go, hour by hour. Can you talk a little bit about the logistics of how you deliver that those services, and how it's different from the way you would think about when you're working with someone and doing everything for them, as opposed to doing one step at a time and advising them, and how that has to shift your the way you approach and communicate with the client, you know, empowering them as opposed to doing it for them?
Well, the first thing that I think is really, really important is with any services, whether it's full representation, unbundled, and especially pay-as-you-go, you have to have a really clear fee agreement. I do know that there are a lot of attorneys out there that don't necessarily do fee or retainer agreements, or they do a very abbreviated retainer agreement. I think it's really, really important that you put in writing exactly the level of service that you're providing, because people don't understand what you're doing, why you're doing it. And it's really easy to have people misunderstand that you're not representing them. You're not coming to their hearings. You're not putting your name on their pleadings. And so you have to be really clear about that in your retainer agreement. And what I do is I put in there that we are providing services to the client for document preparation, and, you know, legal advice only.
Mm-hmm.
We stress the only.
Yeah.
And then we put in there that they will be billed hourly for the time that we spend on their case. And we also specifically put in that fee agreement that if the client requires an additional level of service or full representation, appearance at hearings, there will be a separate fee agreement provided, and they will have to pay a new additional retainer. So
right.
that they're retaining me if I have to go to court and anybody on the planet has to know I actually represent them. It's a whole different level of service with a whole new set of rules. And I make sure they sign that before I take them on, because we all know that at the end of the day, when there's a misunderstanding, the attorney is the one in the hot seat. So we have to be clear about what we're providing to the client. And I explain all of that to them. I explain it to them, I put it in the fee agreement, and then I make sure they read it before they sign it. And I sit there and watch them do it, and I ask them if they have any questions. Because you never want to have somebody say you were supposed to go to court with me, and you don't go. And then I make sure the client understands, and that I understand what level of service they're looking for. How much money they have to get you started really is going to be the catalyst for what you're doing. If they're coming in and bringing you $100 or $200 or $300, you know you're going pay-as-you-go, realistically, because
right.
that's all they've got. If they're bringing you $1,000, now you got something to work with, and you can provide an additional level of service. But I think I make it clear to the client that I'm going to advise them on what I think we need to work on together based upon the kind of case they have, the complexities, and my knowledge of what needs to be done at any given time. But at the end of the day, if they think that they need help with something, then I'm here to help them with that. And then we get started whenever they're ready.
Right.
And then we go from there. But I want to take the lead from the client, definitely, because they know what they can handle the best.
Right. And when they are handling some things themselves, what kind of systems or instructions sheets or what have you put together to help facilitate, you know, people that are going to be handling some of these things on your own, like you talked about earlier a little bit, like filing, they have the instructions. What kind of things have you put together for steps like that that the client are going to be taking on themselves to give them some of that guidance, some of that coaching that might be different from when you're doing things yourself for them?
Well, first of all, I want the clients to understand, too, that, and I don't think a lot of people know this, there's actually a lot of help on the court websites. So I make sure that I direct them to finding forms on the court's website, instructions that are available through the court, as well as the things that we can put together. Very often, we'll just draft up something that's very specifically detailed to the client, where they're filing, what they're filing, what the steps are that they need to take specifically with their case, and then make sure that we are staying on top of what's going on next and inviting them to come back and say, okay, now you've gotten through this phase, let's talk about what needs to be done next, and then you decide for yourself what you want me to help you with. But I take a very individualized approach to these things because family law is so unique to each client. I think it's very hard to have one template that deals with everybody. I'd rather take a few minutes and type up something that is specifically tailored to an individual client in their specific court with their specific circumstances. Then I know that I'm communicating directly to them and dealing with their specific issues.
Right, exactly. And once people proceed with handling some parts on their own, do you find, or how often do you find that folks will maybe file that paperwork, take the next step, and then maybe realize they're a little bit over their head, or things got more complex than they thought, or it got contested and the other person hired an attorney? How often do they then kind of come back and then either decide to pay for additional service or go ahead and just retain for full representation, you know, just find the money somehow?
Well, I'm thinking probably about half the time.
Yeah.
I think people are comfortable with the concept of self-representation to a point. And then very often there's a point, and I think that point comes the first time they go to court. If it's going to happen, I think it's going to be when they first go to court and they're staring at a judge or a magistrate and things are happening in the courtroom that they don't understand. And even though you may have prepared them, it happens faster than they realize. There's language they don't understand. It's just intimidating in general to be in court and not have it be your profession. So even if they did okay, a lot of times they're just scared to go back all by themselves, and they decide they need to find a way to retain an attorney to go with them. They don't want to talk in front of people in the courtroom. It's just a very intimidating experience for a lot of people.
Yeah, and then of course, if they get into that situation where they're feeling uncomfortable, it seems like it's only natural for them to want to go back to you because you are the one that helped them with those initial steps. And so you had an opportunity to bring in a client that may not have had the opportunity to pay you if it was all up front and for start to finish. But given that you were able to start with something small, something that they could afford, you know, you're obviously going to be the person that they're going to then turn to if they want more service from there. I mean, I would assume most of them then would come back to you and retain you because you're the one that did their paperwork, right?
Well, not only am I the one that did their paperwork, but I'm the one that now knows their case. Because in order to do their paperwork properly, I have to become informed about what their case consists of and what are the appropriate steps, who are the parties, what court they're in. So absolutely, they've already paid me for the time to come up to speed on that. So if they decide they want an attorney to represent them, now they're just going to come back to me because they don't now have to pay another person to learn all of that information all over again.
Right, exactly. And I think that's where I would say some attorneys, especially when they're looking at cases that might have more time, when they turn away clients because they aren't getting a big upfront amount, they're losing the opportunity to work with that client on the starting basis and then get the person that will then take that first step and then come back and retain for full representation because they just got the money. Because they're thinking that unless the person has all of it up front right now, they're not going to come. But do you find it interesting that some people, once they have an experience of what that core process looks like, that somehow they're then motivated to find the additional resources financially to bring you into the case on a more of a full representation basis?
That's absolutely the case. In fact, I have a hearing tomorrow morning in which the client started out as an unbundled, and I drafted her initial paperwork. We talked procedure. I helped her get started. She came back a number of times for follow-up work, and then they started in on the hearings, and she was in over her head. So she came up with a very sizable retainer to get me involved. We started the case at the end of 2014. We're still going. And so you can imagine how much money this has cost her to keep me on board, starting with an unbundled and now for full representation. Because we're now almost at the 2-year mark, consistently going. We never stopped. So we never stopped in all this time. And yeah, she's found ways over the course of time. And there have been some times when I've had to let her make payments. Other times she's come up with larger sums of money. And at all times she's thanked me for being flexible on my payments. Obviously, there has to be a limit to some of that, but we have forged a very good relationship because now we've worked together so long that it's the kind of thing where I think she just wants to stay with me. And if there's any way she can make that happen, then that's what she's going to do. Because we've worked together a long time and because I have gone out of my way to try to make it possible for her to continue to have representation, even at times when she couldn't afford it.
Mm. And you, that resonates, forging a relationship. Do you see working with some of these clients, especially beginning in a very affordable first step manner, that you are, in fact, that's what you're doing. You're forging a relationship. You're building trust. You're building, you know, some goodwill by offering these options and helping these folks. And then people then, you know, find a way once they feel like you're bringing that to the table to make sure that, you know, they can continue in the process.
Well, absolutely. And I think, you know, I think when you're dealing with any relationship, whether it's any type of business relationship, whether it's your accountant or it's your barber or it's with your client, it's all about relationships. You know, there's an old cliche that says nobody cares how much you know until they know how much you care. And I certainly didn't make that up. But whoever said it, and I don't know who did, they're absolutely right. And when you're starting with that initial phone call and you're talking about, I want to try to find options to help you, we're going to make a plan to help you, you're forging the relationship from the minute you get on the phone. Because nobody, I don't care how much they think you know about the law, if you're not going to make them feel comfortable and taken care of, you're never going to see them again. They need to be, they want to be taken care of. They have a problem they want you to solve. And when you appeal to that emotion where they're scared, they're frustrated, and you soothe those emotions, they're terrified about what it's going to cost them, then you work with them. All of the things you're doing along the course of the representation, returning their phone calls, returning their emails, returning their text messages. Every bit of that is about forging the relationship and at all times making the client feel like you are going to help them and you're taking care of them, including how you charge them and trying to find a way to provide them service that they can afford.
Yeah. And I can only imagine, I mean, just there might be the odd client that, you know, runs into a tough situation or doesn't pay the bill, you know, or something like that. But I can only assume that the majority of the folks, when you're bringing that to that intention to the table, find a way to make things work to the best of their ability. If you're taking that standpoint and that perspective of serving them in any way you possibly can.
Most of them do. Of course, there's always somebody who, at the end of the day, if they decide they can't afford it and you let them slide a little bit. You know, there are some people who give themselves permission not to pay your bill. And unfortunately, that's something that every attorney has to deal with and find a way to manage. And that's never an easy situation. But I am finding that more often than not, people, they want to do the right thing. And if you've treated them with respect and consideration and respect for their finances and their abilities, then I think they want to make sure that they're treating you with the same level of respect.
Right. Well, Barbara, this has been a really enjoyable conversation. I really appreciate the options you're offering the clients, the ways in which you're being creative, how you bring that relationship first and put that as your commitment, the quality of the communication, how clear you are with people and the way you help them understand that you know, you're putting together that plan for them and walking them through it step by step and giving them the ability to step and kind of one at step at a time forward. I mean, it you know, and the clients of course are really happy to, you know, we're getting great response from that. Given that you've been at this for 2.5 years fielding leads or however, you know, probably coming up on 3 years now, is there anything else that over the years of fielding leads and working with these folks that you've had to change or something that you've learned from experience? It could be anything really that you found has made a big difference in your ability to be successful or, you know, work with these folks and, you know, make ends meet financially and so forth. That you've learned over this time.
Well, there are things that I used to do before I did Unbundled. And I used to be really married to the concept of this is my retainer. You need to bring that amount of money in. You need to set an appointment. I don't want to talk to you on the phone. That's what my assistant is for. And I've had to be more flexible about taking those calls, talking to people for a few minutes up front, making them feel comfortable, starting to build that relationship. It does take time, and it's not always easy to make the time to do that. But I've tried to do that as much as possible, and I think it's helping to forge that relationship and make people want to take the next step. I've also, of course, embraced technology more. The text messaging, because I use a call forwarding VoIP system. And we recently, over the last several months, were able to text message straight to my office number so that I didn't have to use my personal cell phone for that. It's made the communication level go way up. So now I can text the clients and I can keep in touch. And I do have people that, you know, something pops into their head in the evening and they want to text me and I can just get back with great thanks. They know I've seen it. They feel better. I don't even have to do anything. But it's just making that client always feel comfortable that I'm on top of things, even if there's not a lot I have to do. I'm not ignoring them. And that's something I've had to really embrace, do more of, constantly making the client feel like I am in touch with them. They can reach me. I'm taking care of them at all times. And that seems to make a big difference in the way that the representation, well, whether it proceeds and then the way it proceeds.
Yep, absolutely. And so you said that I wanted to just hit that, circle back on that. So you have a text message to your office line, because there are some attorneys that, you know, understandably, just don't feel comfortable texting from their cell phone, perhaps. And we've shown them how to send a text message through email using the default gateway. What is the tool or technology that you're using to be able to receive text messages to your office line? And you text from your office line, right?
I do. I use a VoIP service called phone.com. And it's my office number. It's actually call forwarding, so I can use the system to forward calls to any phone number I designate. So if I'm out of the office on my cell phone, I just tell it to forward to my cell phone. It also rolls over to my assistant's cell phone. So if I'm in the office, we can send it to the office landline. If I want to designate it to a completely separate number, I can do that. But it's also my voicemail. It also sends all of my voicemails to my email. And it also serves as a text messaging function. So I can actually go into my cell phone and text message people. And the caller ID will show that my business number. So people will text that number, and then it will send that text message to my cell phone, not to my personal number, but it actually forwards to my cell phone. And then it will also save that text and send me a copy to my email. And it will notify me that I have a text message and an email. And it's a technology that's not expensive, but it's allowed me to be able to communicate with clients using my business phone number without having to give away my personal cell phone number.
Right.
Which I keep personal.
So for text messaging outbound from your office line, is there an app on your phone that you use? You just click the app and text from that?
It's actually technically not an office line. It's a virtual number. So I go into my cell phone, I bring up the app on my cell phone, and when I text out, it actually shows the business phone number that's published on my website, on my business cards, on the internet, that everybody knows is my business number, even though I'm technically physically texting from my cell phone. The caller ID is my business number.
So very
they know
useful.
That's where it's coming from.
Yep. That's awesome. You know, I guess, you know, some attorneys have had to make that. They said, okay, well, I'll just give up my personal cell, but, you know, certainly that's your own private number. You like to keep that for your family, for your friends, and ideally not mix the business with your personal. So the fact that it's created that opportunity where you can embrace text messaging, but still do it within the office environment is a wonderful service. So we will certainly look into that further and anyone else that's looking to find a way to do that, certainly recommend it as well.
It's been really helpful for me.
Great. Is there any other, do you use a law practice management software or anything like that? Or mainly you just use these communication systems?
I use the communication systems and, you know, I use QuickBooks for accounting, but I don't have a specific practice management software. I I guess I'm the software. I keep a lot of it in my head, and mm-hmm. I pretty much know what's going on with everything. I suppose you can do that yep. when you're a solo. If I get bigger, then I'm going to have to employ more technology.
Of course.
And, you know, I've been considering whether I need to get bigger because we've been very busy. And part of that reason is we're getting a lot of referrals.
Yeah, or leads. Yeah, absolutely. So, yeah, we'll be keeping them coming. I just want to thank you again, Barbara, for taking the time on this call and just sharing so openly how you've been working with the clients and communicating and serving them in the way that you have. We couldn't be happier about the services you're providing and the amount of folks that are very, very, very stoked on the service they've been able to receive from you. And so thank you so much for taking the time and sharing so openly about the way in which you've developed a process to do that.
Thank you for having
me. All right. And so for everyone else that's listening and taking part in the podcast, we certainly thank you for your participation. If you want to give us feedback, you can go on iTunes, leave a review. We read every single one of them and share with anyone you might that you think might benefit as well. So with that, we'll go ahead and wrap up. And until next time, thanks again so much for listening.
For more information about how our lead generation services can help you grow your practice, visit our website at www.unbundledattorney.com. And if you're enjoying this podcast, please be sure to subscribe so you get each new episode as soon as it's available, and leave us a rating and a review on iTunes. Once again, thanks for listening.